Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's November the 2nd, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, AFBF wants rail rates for grains investigated. The WTO is upset with 70 nations that have not filed their agricultural subsidy reports. And there's some infighting among the nation's corn growers. Dave Dickey will have all these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear why we broadcast this program from the RFD studios in Bloomington yesterday. That's where an industry task force made recommendations that could lead to the closure of some research sites around the state and the establishment of others. Oh, and just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the day's agricultural weather. It's all right here on AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The March wheat at 5.10½, up 2 cents for the day. December corn at 3.44¾, up 11¼. They did rally all the way up to 3.53½ today, setting a new contract high. March contract 3.59¼, up 12¼. The May at 3.67, up 13 cents. In July at 3.70½, up 10½ cents. November beans 6.48¼, 3¼ higher. January futures up 3 cents. At 6.61¼, and the March contract at $6.72¼. They're up 4¼ for the day. November's next year up 2½ cents at 6.94. December bean meal futures 195.30, up 2.20. December bean oil at 27.50, and they're up 3 cents for the afternoon. Feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange, November contract 101.97½, off $2.42½. December live cattle at 86.75, we're down 80 cents. February live cattle at $90.10, down 57½, and the lean hog futures were up 20 cents at $64.60 for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan Zwicker is away this afternoon in his stead. Dale Durkles from AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, joining us. Good afternoon to you, Dale.
Good afternoon, Todd.
2 days in a row. Thanks much, by the way, for setting with us. And tell Alan and Lou and folks up there, we appreciate them giving us the studio for the afternoon so we could do the Closing Mark Report from the Farm Bureau building.
Well, whatever works, works, doesn't it?
That's right.
It's like the old farmer. You always go help the neighbor that needs some help.
Yeah, well, now, I don't need that much. Well, from occasionally.
Occasionally, you know. It's just like the way you and I, when we were kids growing up, you always helped the neighbors if they needed something. And it's still true in the farm community.
You bet. Thanks much. And we do appreciate all that you guys did yesterday at the RFD studios. There was a lot of work behind the scenes that most people didn't even make note of, but we appreciate everything that happened there and that you stepped in and talked with us yesterday afternoon. I know Dan's away this afternoon, and man, did the corn market rally today, up the limit at one point, but it finished on the bottom end of that. Not such a big deal, I suppose, because it's still up a lot of pennies for the afternoon. Tell me about this market.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I think the big thing when you look at this market at this point that people have to appreciate, you know, December corn futures have been bouncing over the last week right up against the highs we'd had on a nearby corn chart back when we peaked out in 2004. That was at 3.35¼. And this morning when we bounced and immediately leapt up over top that price, there was a whole boatload of investment money, spec fund money, whatever you want to entail, that was just waiting to buy more. Because the character of the markets we have these days now, really what happens is there is buying when you break out above or break down below support levels, and that's really just what happened this morning. It was just a whole bunch of buy orders up there, and away we went.
Some self-fulfilling prophecies there to some extent. But it did push the market sharply higher, and it maintained that. It finished at 344 and three quarters in the December contract, July at 370 and a half. Both of those were closer to the bottom end than the top end. But if you go a little further out and you take a look at the December of next year, you see something just a bit more interesting, I think, because they finished at 350 and their top was 353. So they were on the top end of that range. What's it tell you about the market?
Yeah, well, you got to be careful when you look out at those real distant months, especially as you leap into next year and beyond, yet, because those contracts there really are pretty much a function of what's going on in the nearby markets themselves. They're a little bit thinner trade out there, too. And, you know, part of it's a spread function playing into the market as well. And, you know, there's a whole group of traders that do nothing but specialize in spreads. It's a board of trade. So I don't tend to read technically a whole lot into the fact that that December 07 contract closed on its high. I think you delve back and still look at what's going on really in front of you, because that's where the bulk of the money that's invested in these markets are really playing in the December and maybe even the March contract.
So let's go back and take a look at what's been happening in the front end of this. There was a cash house today predicting 10, and then I don't know who did this. It was a 10.729 billion bushel crop, down 176 million from last month's USDA forecast. So, of course, the crop production reports are due out shortly. And if that were correct, that would put the carryout at 820 million bushels, or just 6.9% of usage. That's the lowest in history, at least since the 1960 era. And the ratio at 6.9, not too terribly far off the 5% that happened with the 95-96 time frame.
Right. You know, really, I don't know that the numbers that were out late yesterday, F.C. Stone put out one at just over 10.8, and then we had that one this morning at 10.79. I don't know that those numbers were hugely important, because they really just kind of confirmed in everybody's minds what had been talked about the last couple of weeks, and that the report a week from today could show us that we're going to lose a bushel, maybe 2 bushels an acre on corn yield. But the important thing is what those numbers psychologically did to the market, in that they really kind of gave everybody the green light to want to chase the thing again this morning. And that's why I say, you know, there wasn't any negatives. We immediately, because we were right up underneath it when we closed last night, we immediately jumped up over top of that 335 and just very quickly just went to limit.
Okay, so if it's because it's spec buying, in your opinion, and it was probably computer generated, or they were stops that were, or they were buy orders that were already there, what happens tomorrow? And then tell me about this $7 bean number we're starting to see.
Well, you know, I don't know that, you know, tomorrow, in one sense, it's going to be important, because it's going to be an interesting development to see how we do end up closing out the week itself. And even though we ended up closing, like you said, with December corn down near the lower end of the trade we had, at least during the day session, you know, we're probably going to see how strong this gap we left this morning is. You know, it really just kind of, if you looked at it on a continuous daily, you know, I mean, we surge to new above that 04 high. If we tend to leave this gap open, it's going to tend to make this thing look stronger in the short term yet. So where we close out tomorrow is going to be of some importance, but I'd bet that, you know, after what we've seen this week, we had started early. We actually broke down day before yesterday, you know, and then came back yesterday was strong and today strong. So I think anybody that had taken profits up against this 335 number that's been so important probably already has been out. So I don't think there's going to be a lot there. The other thing is, this is the beginning of the new month, yesterday being the first day, you know, so we really don't have any of this end-of-the-month profit taking to play into the picture here, too. So I'm betting that, you know, we tend to see things hold together tomorrow, and with the close over 335, and, you know, if you do that, you know, it just gives another positive technical signal to this marketplace and the investment/big money crowd reason to just stay on the market for now.
You're just willing to stay on the sidelines with cash sales?
I think at this point, you know, the only thing really I'm telling people to go ahead and make at this point is, you know you have some immediate cash flow needs, and by that, let's say between now and the very beginning of December, you know, go ahead and you know, use these rallies to make those sales. David asked me this morning, would I rather sell beans or corn? And I guess just looking at the fundamental structure of itself, you know, beans probably are a more logical sale than corn because corn fundamentally still has better potential to maybe move up yet. But maybe a little bit of a blend of both. But I think it's important people keep their cash flow needs covered. But I don't think you really sell much more than what you need for cash flow needs yet.
We appreciate much you joining us today.
Good talking to you today.
Thank you much.
You have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Dale Durkles was with AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, filling in this afternoon for Dan Zwicker, who normally joins us on Thursdays here on the Closing Market Report.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt. Our own Ed Kieser says tonight the forecast will be across the two-state region in the north, partly to mostly cloudy early, then clearing elsewhere, clear and cold, lows from 15 in northwestern Illinois to 25 in the south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs will range from 40 in the far north to 53 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, wind speed 7 to 14 miles an hour. The extended forecast, a few light sprinkles possible in the northern half of the two states on Saturday, and farther south Saturday night, but mostly dry weather will prevail. Dave Dickey is here now with a complete look at today's agricultural newscast.
In agricultural news, the American Farm Bureau Federation is calling for investigation of rail rates for grains. The AFBF says there are discrepancies in rates between grains and other commodities. The AFBF is calling on the Surface Transportation Board to investigate. Earlier this month, the GAO reported grain rates have diverged from industry trends, noting, for example, coal transportation rates have declined 35% between 1985 and 2004, while grain rates have increased by 9% for the same period. The World Trade Organization is becoming increasingly upset over nations failing to report their agricultural subsidies. The chairman of the WTO's Ag Committee says 70 WTO members have not filed subsidy reports covering the years 1995 to 2000. The European Union, Canada, and the U.S. have not filed agricultural subsidy reports since 2001. There's growing disagreement between the National Corn Growers Association and the American Corn Growers Association about what's best for producers in Farm Bill 2007. The NCGA is recommending a move toward revenue-based safety nets with recourse rather than non-recourse loans. ACGA officials say there's a better way. Chief Executive Larry Mitchell says, and this is a direct quote, "We need a farm bill program that provides a price support rather than taxpayer subsidies and taxpayer-subsidized insurance companies, as suggested by NCGA leadership." ACGA says non-recourse loans are needed to set a minimum price floor under corn. Scientists at USDA's Ag Research Service in Peoria say pennycress could be a viable biodiesel source. ARS researcher Terry Isbell says pennycress seed is 36 to 40% oil by weight with similar characteristics to other biodiesel resources. Tests are underway to convert pennycress to biodiesel. And the Renewable Fuels Association says demand for ethanol in August of 2006 was 69,000 barrels more than for the same month a year ago. In the first 8 months of 2006, the RFA says ethanol production is averaging 305,000 barrels a day. That's an annual rate of 4.7 billion barrels. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report, urging you to visit our website at WILLAG.org. Well, up next, a task force is recommending some changes to the University of Illinois field research facilities. As you'll hear, it could mean the closure of some U of I research sites around the state and the establishment of others. The Research Station Revitalization Task Force was commissioned by the U of I to review the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences Field Research and Education Centers. There are 7 of these stations, including the South Farms on the Urbana-Champaign campus. The other 6 are referred to as the Orr Center, Dixon Springs, Brownstown, Monmouth, DeKalb, that one's actually located in Chabadon, and St. Charles. If the commission's recommendations were to be followed to the letter, the dean of the College of Aces, Bob Easter, says those 7 would be merged into 5 units.
One recommendation is that we merge or combine 2 facilities in northern Illinois. There's one at Monmouth, one at Chabana, and those facilities would be phased out as we create a new facility that would be in response to the needs of northern Illinois. That was one major recommendation. Another one is that the Brownstown facility, which is in the Mount Vernon area, would be closed, and that a new facility would be created somewhere in southern Illinois, more representative of the soils than we have at our current location at Dixon Springs, and the crop research programs, corn and soybean basically, currently down at Dixon Springs would be moved to this site.
The Dixon Springs facility would remain operational, concentrating on beef cattle and forestry research. The task force urges the University of Illinois to open the Dixon Springs facility to collaboration with Southern Illinois University. It did the same for all the facilities and their neighboring educational institutions. Dixon Springs is located in the Shawnee National Forest. It, like the other field research sites, would be retrofitted or upgraded to become what the chair of the task force called world-class. Ed McMillan says this means not only would agricultural research be carried on at the upgraded facilities, but each would be outfitted with high-end educational classrooms. Members of the Illinois agricultural community staffed the task force McMillan headed with input from university officials. Bob Easter, the dean of ACES, says the recommendation it made to close, combine, or move some of the research from one facility to another is thought-provoking.
Now it's our challenge to take these ideas, and there are some very good ideas, some things that we hadn't thought about, and determine how those would fit with the strategic intent, the plans of the college, and our capacity to respond. And so we'll work on that over the next several months.
The task force has completed its mission. The primary goal was to find ways to make the field research and education centers sustainable. That, of course, involves money, along with the restructuring. The committee suggests the Orr Center funding model could be adapted for the field research sites across the state. The surrounding communities and educational institutions in western Illinois have heavily supported the University of Illinois' Orr Center, says Task Force Chair Ed McMillan. It has made the Orr Center sustainable, and that, he says, is the goal for the other research sites.
Well, first of all, the objective of the sustainability model is to make sure that as we revitalize current facilities or as we put in new facilities, that we have the fixed assets in land, facilities, infrastructure to support the mission of teaching, research, and outreach. But in addition to that we have a long-term funding model so that we don't just have the assets put in and then we don't have the money to operate them going forward. So that's the driving force. What we're trying to find is a way to ensure that in the geographic area that the facility is going to support, that it has support from state funding, from geographic initiatives, whether it be junior colleges and other state institutions in the state, as well as the state of Illinois, and also constituents within that area, whether it be Republican or Democratic initiatives, individuals, it brings them all together with a common goal of supporting all that can come out of this facility.
It still, says McMillan, becomes a state funding issue. Yet if done properly, he and other task force members believe restructuring the U of I's field research and education centers will cause local buy-in. Now, this means collaboration with high schools and community colleges and other four-year universities. It points to deliberate efforts to serve local needs. A good example can be made in St. Charles in the northern part of the state. That facility is in the heart of the green industry, and the task force says the College of ACES Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences Department should reach out to it. The dean of the College of ACES says that type of direct contact within a community is the reason the Orr Center near Perry in the western part of the state works.
The Orr Center is a joint effort, if you will, between John Woods Community College and the University of Illinois. They have facilities, teaching instructional facilities on that site. We have research facilities. Some of our staff actually deliver some lectures in their instructional programs. It's worked very well. And one of the strong recommendations from the community, from the task force, was that we work to better integrate the educational and research facilities in agriculture across the state, and we're supportive of doing that. And we have conversations with the other individuals responsible for leading programs at Western Illinois State and Southern Illinois University. And I'm optimistic that we can move in that direction.
It is a direction that coincides with the first premise outlined by the task force, that University of Illinois researchers have access to multiple locations around the state to address important local issues. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
On this Thursday afternoon, Bill Mayer, Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, thanks for filling in for Paul Cooley yesterday afternoon and for being gracious when Dale Durkle stepped into the fray yesterday from the RFD studios, too. I didn't quite expect he would drop in on us.
No problem. I thought it was a good conversation.
He was our backup plan and backed right into the marketplace, too. You guys were both. It's kind of interesting. You mentioned to me just before we went on the air, you both were talking about 350 corn, but I don't think either of you thought you'd see it today.
Nope, I'd have to say I didn't.
well,
it's that kind of market, though.
It is that kind of market. Tell me, when you look at this, do you have to go back to the 70s to compare? Do you go back to the mid-90s to compare? Is it just altogether new that we're doing this in the middle of the third largest harvest of corn on record?
I think your real comparison would be going back to the 70s because, as Dale mentioned yesterday, it's a demand-driven market. And really, in if you look at the 95-96 period, the real driver there was demand, of course, but it was also the fact that we had a short crop in 95 that really got things going, which we haven't had this year, at least maybe it's shorter than we thought, but not a short, what I call a short crop.
Now, there will be some that want to take advantage of the cash markets after a big pop in the marketplace like happened today. Should they do that for either the corn or the soybeans?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think that there's, as we talked about yesterday, there's nothing wrong with selling corn at these levels. I think we saw some corn sold today, although not huge amounts. I think, you know, drop dead storage dates and things like that. 3.25 was reached in the cash market in a lot of areas. I think that's kind of a magic number. The bases did back off in this area a couple of cents today. Just, I think, because we're up, you know, so high on the futures that corn was moving. But I don't know. When I talk to elevators, I keep hearing this theme that there's a lot of, you know, a high percentage of the elevator deliveries are already purchased.
And when you hear that, does that mean that they're satisfied or that they're just going to wait around and move it when they want to?
The farmer?
No, the elevator.
The elevator?
Themselves.
No, I think the elevator is already starting to move some of it. I think it's a matter there of spreads and bases, and as long as we have, you know, we've kind of relaxed these spreads and have a little more carry in the market, I think as long as we have that, they'll keep the hedges out there. But, you know, as the basis comes in and wants the grain, they'll move it.
And one final question before I get the numbers from you. There will be many producers that have said, well, you guys have been telling us to sell cash corn for a long time. And I think if we go back even into July, it was if it gets to 270, 280 cash, scale in, sell, and we're still, you know, when we popped up to 350 and we're at 344 this afternoon, we're still at that scale in, sell model. All of that, and some will gripe about that, but is there... I guess that's just a strategy to market into a market that's moving upwards.
Yeah, and one of the rules that we've always tried to go by that our president John Roach has had for years is when you're seeing the carryout tighten, you go a lot slower on your sales than you do when you see the carryout getting bigger as you look out there. And I think that's the only way to average into this thing is to do that. Granted, you'd be better off not to make those 270 sales, but there's years where you make those 270 sales and they're the highs too. So
yeah.
I think you just got to look at it from a long-term standpoint.
And the other old adage is it's a heck of a lot easier to sell on the way up than it is to try to do it on the way down. What is your bid for the day?
326 for cash corn and 627 for beans.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
And that's Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Details remain limited about the death of a man who was apparently being pursued by police in Georgetown. Vermilion County Sheriff's officials say 47-year-old Curtis Sloan was pronounced dead at a Danville hospital late last night. He had been involved in a foot chase with a Georgetown officer. An autopsy was planned for today. A prosecutor contends a woman accused of drowning her three children in Clinton Lake had such low self-esteem that she went along with her former boyfriend's plan to kill the children. Prosecutor Roger Simpson gave his opening statement this morning in the case against Amanda Hamm, who's accused of drowning her children in 2003. The Illinois Pollution Control Board has adopted a plan that's designed to reduce the amount of mercury emissions coming from the state's coal-fired power plants. Under the plants would be required to reduce mercury pollution by 90% or more by 2009. The Illinois standards would be stricter than those adopted by the federal government last year. The new rule now must be submitted to the General Assembly's Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, which gives it a final approval. Mercury is linked to learning disabilities and developmental delays in children, and to heart, nervous system, and kidney damage in adults. Illinois' economy appears to be mirroring a slight national drop in activity. That's the assessment of the author of the University of Illinois Flash Index. The monthly gauge of activity in the state measured a small drop in October compared to the month before. But economist Fred Gertz says still the state's economy is expanding, just slightly below the fast pace seen in 2005. A healthcare advocacy group is criticizing 15th District Congressman Tim Johnson's stance on Medicare's year-old prescription drug program. The Medicare Task Force is calling Part D a sham and says Johnson's Democratic challenger, Dr. David Gill, would change the program to allow for the government to negotiate lower drug prices. A Johnson spokesman says people are still saving money under Part D. Meanwhile, Congressman Johnson says he wants to bring a congressional hearing over the authority of the NCAA to champagne. Johnson's sponsoring a bill that would limit the College Athletic Association's ability to regulate the use of mascots. The University of Illinois is under event hosting restrictions because of its Chief Illiniwek symbol, which Johnson says he supports. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to The Information Advantage on WILL. We're joined on a Thursday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast around the nation and the globe by Pete Levitt, meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Yes, good afternoon, Todd.
Let's not talk about the agricultural weather forecast, but maybe just here in the Midwest, what the temperatures will be like, simply because harvest is really starting to wind up pretty well.
Yes, they finally got things moving this past week with the dry weather, although we're still running behind in Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana on the corn harvest. They should catch up pretty quickly. This cold air tonight will be replaced by some milder air coming in as we move into the weekend with fair weather, and then some prospects for moisture coming up towards the early part of next week. And the only significance there, I think, is to whether the people will be able to get out and get to the polls on Tuesday, and it looks to us as though it's not going to be a problem in northern and central Illinois with fair to partly cloudy weather, though there can be some showers in southern Missouri, and then on eastward up the Ohio River Valley, extreme southern Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio at that time, so that might be the only problem there. The rest of the eastern half of the country, the Rockies to the coast, look fair.
Even if it is a problem, everybody has the right and the value of going to vote to the polls and voting, and they should.
I certainly concur with that.
Absolutely. Let's take a look at some other places around the globe, South America in particular, where the corn and the soybean crop are growing into the ground.
Yeah, well, we've had some good rain in Brazil a week ago, and it's dried out since then, and that's actually been favorable. They got the moisture down. They're planting some soybeans and in southeastern Brazil right now, and I think that the pre-planting moisture and the fair weather we're looking at now for the next few days should favor that, so we don't have a problem seeing that crop into the ground. Farther south in the Argentine, they had some fairly heavy rain in parts of their winter wheat belt, winter grains that haven't completely matured there, this is harvest time, probably benefited a bit by that rain. The summer crops, of course, will be benefited by the moisture in those areas down in there. So the weather in South America, Brazil and Argentina have improved from certainly from prospects we saw a year ago, and I think things are looking a little better today.
We appreciate you being with us, Pete.
My pleasure.
We'll talk with you next Thursday. Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Parkit Report on Thursday afternoons. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the ag markets with Dave Dickey, and that you can pick all of our programming up, or most of it, off our website at willag.org. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.